Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our analysis of a woman who was not only a major inspiration to post-World War II Nazism, but someone who has formed some very significant and ominous links between some elements, again, note my use of the term elements, of New Age philosophy and Nazism. That woman's name was Savitri Devi. She was of mixed Greek and French origin, but she eventually became infatuated with India and in turn became consumed with the Hindu-Aryan myth. We're going to continue with this biography of Savitri Devi that we were dealing with in our last half-hour segment. That book is called Hitler's Priestess, Savitri Devi, the Hindu-Aryan Myth, and Neo-Nazism. The book was authored by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, last name G-O-O-D-R-I-C-K hyphen capital C-L-A-R-K-E. It was published in hardcover by New York University Press, copyright 1998, and the ISBN number is 0-8147-3110-4. By the way, Savitri Devi is capital S-A-V-I-T-R-I and capital D-E-V-I. At the conclusion of the last half-hour segment, we were taking a look at Savitri Devi's very close links with two of the most significant leaders of the post-World War II Nazi underground, both of them, by the way, heroes of the military heroes of the Third Reich, and also people who are very closely connected with what I, not closely connected with, but are prime functionaries of what I have termed the Underground Reich, namely former Luftwaffe pilot Hans-Ulrich Rudel, and also former SS commando Otto Skorzeny, one of the leaders of the Odessa, and also a key functionary of the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit that jumped to U.S. intelligence at the end of World War II. What we're going to look at next is Savitri Devi's links with so-called neo-Nazis. I don't like the term. They're simply the next generation, but that is the term that has come into a popular usage. In addition to being tied in, very closely connected to the old guard, Savitri Devi was and is a leading light to, quote, neo-Nazis, unquote. Nicholas Goodrick Clark writes about this as follows. Through her divination of Hitler and National Socialism, Savitri Devi became a leading light of the international neo-Nazi underground from the early 1960s onward. She was a confidant of Colin Jordan, the flamboyant leader of the National Socialist movement in Britain, and his henchman John Tyndall, capital T-Y-N-D-A-L-L, who heads the British National Party today. She knew Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the American Nazi Party, and in August 1962, she attended the notorious Cotswold Camp in Gloucestershire that acted as the founding meeting of the World Union of National Socialists, or WUNS. In the late 1960s, her books were reprinted in National Socialist World, the organ of the WUNS, published by Lincoln Rockwell and William Pierce. I would note that William Luther Pierce is the head of the National Alliance, the most important contemporary American Nazi group. He also, the publishing arm of that organization, publishes not only the Turner Diaries, authored by William Pierce, and the blueprint for the Nazi group The Order, and also for Timothy McVeigh and company in the Oklahoma City bombing, but William Pierce and National Vanguard Books also publish the book Serpent's Walk, which I have accessed so often. That also, like the Turner Diaries, is much more than the novel it purports to be. It appears to be a blueprint and a manifesto for the contemporary Nazi movement. The book Serpent's Walk, discussed at considerable length in many past broadcasts, is about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS who go underground to form a flight capital organization, build up their economic power, buy into the American opinion-forming media, infiltrate the U.S. Army, and then take over the United States after a biological warfare attack by genetically engineered viruses of ostensible Russian origin, wipe out much of the American population, the president and the vice president, in particular people on both coasts of the United States and in major cities. This is followed by a declaration of martial law by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who has become president. He is a sympathizer with the Nazis and who invites them into a ruling coalition, and they take over the United States. Note here the connection between William Pierce and Savitri Devi. The book Serpent's Walk is actually, in many ways, it borrows heavily on Indian mythology, and that's what the title comes from. It's from a Hindu myth about the battle between a cobra and a mongoose. Continuing with the text of Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, we read, And this is in discussion of the book National Socialist World. In the pages of the magazine, she was credited with a, quote, mysterious and unfailing wisdom according to which nature lives and creates, the impersonal wisdom of the primeval forest and of the ocean depths, and of the spheres in the dark fields of space which Adolf Hitler made the basis of a practical regeneration policy of worldwide scope. By the 1980s, Savitri Devi had assumed the status of a cult figure herself on the neo-Nazi scene. Her eclectic ideas deriving from Hinduism, the myth of the Aryan race, Germanophilia, and adoration, the word is not too strong for Adolf Hitler, supplied a new mystique for that sinister minority of Nazi apologists in various countries around the world. Following her death in 1982, her ashes were placed in a Nazi shrine at Lincoln Rockwell's headquarters in Arlington, Virginia. Ernst Zundel, the German-Canadian publisher of Holocaust revisionism, sold her books and taped interviews in mass editions to young German neo-Nazis. Miguel Serrano, the former Chilean ambassador and pioneer of, quote, esoteric Hitlerism, unquote, paid fulsome tribute to her inspiration in his own books about the Hitler avatar. Nazi Satanist groups and skinheads in Europe, America, and New Zealand cultivate her memory and ideas today. In Savitri Devi and her entourage, one finds an articulate statement of the Hitler cult that defines the unholy theology of neo-Nazism. And of Savitri Devi's inspirations and of some of the things that led her to become contemptuous of humans, sympathetic to animals, and particularly contemptuous of democracy, we read of her childhood in France. She was contemptuous of the French Revolution and the Republican pride of the French. She regarded the ideals of equality, liberty, and fraternity as specious, and was once punished at school for making an obscene gesture at the plaque displaying the Declaration of the Rights of Man. Above all, she had a great love of animals. From the age of 5, she voiced concern about man's cruelty to animals, animal experiments, circuses, and the fur trade. While still a schoolgirl, she abjured meat-eating and insisted that her mother prepare vegetarian food for her. The peasant torture of cats in France, a folk practice based on medieval superstition, disgusted her and turned her further against mankind. This affection for animals and her feelings of misanthropy led her to mistrust and eventually reject the man-centered nature of Western beliefs and values. This attitude became the hallmark of her Weltanschauung, that, by the way, translates as worldview. What we're going to look at next is Savitri Devi's significant influence on the New Age, and beyond that, the confluence between her fascist philosophy, or her brand of fascist philosophy, and some aspects of New Age philosophy, and also green philosophy, that is to say, pro-ecology philosophy. I want to stress that I'm not in any way implying that all or even most of either New Age or green philosophy is fascist, but nonetheless, there are some very, very strong connections between some elements of both and fascism, and I think people who value both aspects, both green philosophy and New Age religion, should be keenly aware of the potential dangers in that regard. Savitri Devi was not only very closely connected to people like Otto Skorzeny and Hans Ulrich Rudel, George Lincoln Rockwell, and William Pierce. She also is held in high regard by some aspects of the New Age, including the Rosicrucians based right here in San Jose. We read about this in Hitler's Priestess as follows. Savitri Devi's influence on international neo-Nazism and other hybrid strains of mystical fascism has been continuous since the mid-1960s and beyond her death into the 1990s. But the very eccentricity of her thought, combining as it does Aryan supremacism and anti-Semitism with Hinduism, animal rights, and a fundamentally biocentric view of life, has led to strange alliances in radical ideology. Indications of her potential appeal to occult, neo-pagan, ecological, and New Age groups are apparent in the interest shown by Mayat, Boucher, Serrano, and Mason in her ideas. Those are all contemporary fascist leaders. In their writings, paganism, magic, and the natural order act as a foil for a cleansing wave of fascist violence that will sweep away a corrupt humanity, leaving only Aryans in possession of a pristine world. Their thought is undeniably fascist in inspiration, but her ideas also hold an appeal for, quote, alternative, unquote, movements whose inspiration is far removed from such sources. In 1954, the ancient and mystical order of the Rosicrucis, or AMORC, America's leading Rosicrucian occult order, published a second edition of A Son of God. That, by the way, is one of Savitri Devi's titles. Founded in 1915 by H. Spencer Lewis, AMORC offers a non-denominational approach to ancient wisdom teachings. In his early years, the American founder had been involved in theosophy and several occult lodges in Britain, as well as with Aleister Crowley and his magical Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO. By the way, Aleister Crowley, the OTO, and theosophy have also had major influence on the occult origins of Nazism, and in turn, some elements of all of those milieu, of that milieu, have also become explicitly Nazi. Note my use of the term elements. Continuing. Lewis received a formal Rosicrucian initiation at Toulouse in 1909, but he also laid emphasis on the arrival of traditional Rosicrucians in North America in the 1690s. He was versed in theosophical lore concerning rounds, root races, and Aryans, and also held the ancient Egyptians in great esteem, especially Akhenaten. By the way, I would note that Akhenaten, who founded a sun cult in ancient Egypt, was also somebody who was revered by Savitri Devi, and someone who influenced Savitri Devi's occult philosophies. Continuing. From its Californian headquarters, comprising an entire city block built with sphinxes, domes, and porticos in San Jose, AMORC now runs a very successful non-profit educational foundation with tens of thousands of members worldwide seeking health, happiness, and human progress. Its influence in the New Age movement has been enormous. As a key volume in the AMORC Rosicrucian Library, Savitri Devi's book is always available, last reprinting in 1992. Please note this. Continuing. From the late 1960s onward, growing numbers of individuals began to dissent from the values and institutions of modern Western society. The hippie movement of 1965 through 73 celebrated drugs, Eastern religions, and other forms of exotic enlightenment against the, quote, false civilization, unquote, of denominational religion, reason, and industrial modernity. By the 1970s, there was more widespread concern about the unchecked exploitation of the Earth's limited resources, urbanization, and the destruction of the environment. The Marxist critique traced these ills to the power of the bourgeoisie and international capital, but these scapegoats were giving way to a broader condemnation of urban industrial culture by the 1980s. With the advent of the New Age movement, man was felt to have lost his roots in nature, leading an artificial life among machines and automated processes that robbed him of his humanity and a meaningful life. Rudolf Barrow, B-A-H-R-O, a leading left-wing green and an important New Age figure, identifies patriarchy, the Judeo-Christian religious tradition, and the entire rationalist and scientific praxis of the West as the root causes of man's alienation. Green thinkers are especially pessimistic about the effects of human population on nature. New advocates of Malthusianism, the doctrine that species proliferate until they exhaust their food resources, oppose liberal and Christian notions of aid to the needy. In the 1970s, there were widespread appeals for zero population growth or decline, if necessary, backed by repressive measures, especially in third world countries. The Environmental Fund, a prestigious international grouping, took the view that sending food aid to the hungry only encouraged their population growth. Other organizations like Zero Population Growth, the Campaign to Check the Population Explosion, and Planned Parenthood World Population also focused attention on the overbreeding in poor nations. Paul Ehrlich's bestseller The Population Bomb suggested tax penalties for childbearing and breaking off relations with the Vatican opposed to birth control. A rhetoric using inflammatory terms of violence, bomb, and explosion was matched by a contempt for humans, plague, unquote, and people pollute, unquote. By the way, all of those are in quotes. Continuing. Many ecologists identified the teeming colored races of Africa, Asia, and South America as the root cause of the world population problem. By the way, I don't want to be misunderstood again as implying that ecology is fascist, but there are some aspects of the ecological movement that are, and that's discussed in a two-part miscellaneous archive show available from Spitfire entitled Ecofascism. Continuing. An extreme school of ecological catastrophism regards all human civilization as deleterious and evil. Such anti-humanist sentiment, coupled with an idealization of animals and nature, represents a break with liberal thought. Many radical ecologists believe that human population must be drastically reduced because humans have simply become too numerous, placing an intolerable burden upon their natural environment. Edward Kallenbach's novel Ecotopia, published in 1978, described a revolutionary ecological regime in the Pacific Northwest that secedes from the United States. Its ecocentric policy is enforced through a variety of repressive, violent, and exclusionary measures against any opposition. Once human beings are stigmatized as a threat to Mother Nature, Christian and Enlightenment notions of human equality and the sanctity of human life start to retreat. Nazi modes of thought concerning unfit life, unquote, the old, sick, and indigent, hierarchies of human value, and eugenic programs find ready acceptance among those who despair of mankind. The American movement of deep ecology betrays an uneasy resemblance to Savitri Devi's biocentric vision. Its precepts of community and cooperation are belied by romantic irrationalism and the assertion that all nature is equal. In his pioneering work, The Arrogance of Humanism, in 1978, the leading U.S. biocentrist David Ehrenfeld rejects the humanist foundation of modern life, denying that any part of nature has more value than another. Due to man's global health schemes, the pox virus is now an endangered species. Inspired by the Norwegian philosopher Arne Naess, N-A-E-S-S, Bill DeVall and George Sessions, both American professors, have publicized deep ecology and biocentrism as a fundamentalist movement opposed to the pragmatic approach of reform ecology. In their influential book, Deep Ecology, published in 1985, man is regarded as a degenerate and artificial creature in painful opposition to wild, untamed nature. Only a radical reevaluation of human importance can avert the grim future of a teeming, polluted planet. Man must give up his privileged position as the Lord of the Earth and seek a new accommodation with nature at once harmonious, modest, and subordinate. And skipping down more about the degree of confluence between the deep ecology movement and the fascist and Nazi philosophy of Savitri Devi, we read, "All nature has intrinsic worth and equality, and whatever science that remains should be non-dominating. But if Deval, D-E-V-A-L-L, and Sessions couch deep ecology in gentle words, their biocentrist epigenes use a sterner language. Dave Foreman, the founder of the radical movement Earth First, conflates romanticism and brutality in a manner reminiscent of Savitri Devi. Primitivist sentiments such as, dream the bison back, sing the swan hither, unquote, and, quote, back to the Pleistocene, unquote, punctuate Foreman's views that starving Ethiopians should be left to die, and Malthus was right, quote, there are too many people on the earth, unquote. He agrees with Arne Naess that the Earth's human population should be reduced to about 100 million. Another contributor to his magazine has recommended a drastic 80% reduction in the global human population while praising AIDS as a valuable ecological weapon. The German Green leader Herbert Gruhl, G-R-U-H-L, has even echoed Savitri Devi's passion for nuclear destruction. Because only Westerners are amenable to birth control programs, the overcrowded peoples of the Third World will one day regard, quote, the atom bomb no longer as a threat, but as a liberation, unquote. And continuing with this line of analysis, left-wing writers have been the fiercest critics of deep ecology, which they accuse of smuggling fascist discourse into liberal society. Quote, people are S-blank-blank-blank, unquote. A recent quote from the German eco-magazine Instinkte illustrates the left-wing claim that biocentrism denies the moral basis of any human rights to equality and support. By rejecting man's claim to distinctiveness from animals and plants, either through spiritual transcendence or social consciousness, biocentrism reduces mankind to mere biomass, a burden on nature. And by blaming humanity collectively for ecological disaster, deep ecology deflects any critique of capitalism and authority, thereby frustrating genuine social emancipation. Skipping down, only by denying the special status of man and his anthropocentric traditions of Judaism, Christianity, humanism, and socialism Can capitalism soften up democracy to accept the mass dying of third world populations, as well as the euthanasia of the elderly, ill, poor, and redundant in the rich North? Such a counter-transcendent strategy will facilitate the exploitation of human beings as raw material in 21st century industries based on genetic engineering, embryo farming, and cloning. Please note this, because I think this is something we have to be very careful about. Skipping down, more on this confluence between Savitri Devi's fascism and some elements of contemporary green thinking. Nature is divinized, man is relegated. The ultra-right-wing Noontide Press in California has recognized this receptivity to the Nazi religion of nature by bringing out a new edition of Savitri Devi's Impeachment of Man in 1991. Presented by the publisher as an indictment of the values and mores of our modern, human-centered, quote, produce and consume society, unquote, the book attempts to popularize Savitri Devi's conviction that divinity manifests itself in all of nature, that man is nothing special, and that his recent ideas of universal equality and entitlement to prosperity at the expense of the rest of nature are fundamentally wrong. The beautiful tiger, the great banyan tree, the lithe felines, according to Savitri Devi, these are noble creatures, but not all, quote, two-legged mammals, unquote, qualify. Only the strong, intelligent Aryan is fit to survive in a redeemed biocentric order. The publisher's foreword gives a brief account of her life, mentioning her lifelong devotion to Nazism and her books in which, quote, she portrayed Hitler and National Socialism as expressions of transcendent spiritual truth, unquote. Such an edition is a telling example of the new entryism the far right is currently pursuing in its appeal to green and New Age audiences. But Savitri Devi's emphasis on nature and animal rights against the claims of mankind could evoke a wider response in mass urban society. Ecological sentiment often owes more to an urbanized lifestyle than any authentic awareness of nature. Skipping down. Nor is Savitri Devi's vision of the noble Aryan far removed from primitivist currents of New Age thought. The German folkish and youth movements in the period of 1890 to 1930 mixed paganism and nature worship with reverence for barbarian virtue. Ancient Germans, racial purity, and national revival were all bound up with the merits of nature. Many New Age groups rehearsed the native aspects of these Nazi precursors in a eulogy of the primitive. The movement began in the 1970s with European support for the cultural struggle of the North American Indians, but politics soon gave way to mythology. And skipping down, by the early 1980s, the enthusiasm for North American Indians and their ecological esoteric wisdom had spread to the ancient European tribes, the, quote, Indians of the West, unquote. In the New Age movement, there are now numerous groups devoted to reviving the wisdom of the ancient Celts and Teutons. Druids and old Germanic priest kings, witches, and priestesses now provide New Age precursors closer to home and Western identity. Books, workshops, and conferences on paganism, shamanism, runes, and magic proliferate. The Anglo-American Asatru Free Assembly and Odinists revive Neo-Germanic paganism, while in Germany Neo-Folkish groups such as the Goden, G-O-D-E-N, and Armannenschaft, a revival of the Guido von Liszt Society, swiftly reoriented themselves toward the New Age concern with feminism, ecology, and esoteric lore. The Aryan mysticism of Julius Evola was rediscovered by New Age publications. Nostalgia for a lost golden age and apocalyptic hopes of its revival recall the ideological foreground of earlier demands for fascist renewal. By the way, keep in mind Julius Evola. We're going to touch on him briefly in just a minute. Deep ecology, biocentrism, nature worship, and New Age paganism reflect a hostility towards Christianity, rationalism, and liberalism in modern society. Although these radical movements often have their roots in left-wing dissent, their increasing tendency toward myth and despair indicate their susceptibility to millenarian and mystical ideas on the far right. Neo-Nazi and fascist activists now actively seek to infiltrate the ecological and esoteric scene. The cybernetic encirclement of man and his complete divorce from nature could well foster a more fundamental alienation. In a congested and automated world, Savitri Devi's sentimental love of animals and hatred of the masses may find new followers. The pessimism of the Kali Yuga and her vision of a pristine new Aryan order possess a perennial appeal in times of uncertainty and change. And indeed, I think this is something people have to be very, very aware of. And again, I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing all or most of either the New Age or the Green Movement as fascistic, but there are some powerful elements of both that are indeed being seduced by fascism, and Savitri Devi's thought is in the foreground of those. Again, you heard reference to Julius Evola, last name capital E-V-O-L-A. He was a Nazi mystic who predicted a golden age if fascism ever triumphed. One sees his books now on the shelves of New Age bookstores. There's another fascist who is also becoming influential, I should say, in certain New Age circles, and that is a fellow named Albert Pike. Albert Pike was a Confederate general in World War II, in the American Civil War, He also was in charge of military intelligence for the Confederate armies. And Albert Pike, just like another Confederate general, Nathan Bedford Forrest, was a disciple of an occultist named Eliphas Levi. Depending on who you talk to, he has been characterized as a Satanist, but whether or not he was, the fact of the matter is that General Nathan Bedford Forrest and General Albert Pike were disciples of his, and Albert Pike has become influential in New Age circles. And Nathan Bedford Forrest and Albert Pike, the New Age icon, or at least the icon in certain New Age circles, were the co-founders of the Ku Klux Klan. And when the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan is influential in certain New Age circles, I think it is time to pay very, very close attention to the seduction of a number of different types of philosophies, in particular people involved with the occult, by fascism. The various tapes that I've done, including many tapes about connections between the occult and fascism, are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, capital S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. Once again, that's Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There's a list of and description of the various tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com that is equipped with real audio. People can email me at my home base station, KFJC-FM, in the South San Francisco Bay Area at demory@kfjc.org. That's demory@kfjc.org. Please note that I don't have time to answer correspondence even by email, so please don't feel insulted. I'm just burdened in terms of time and resources. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.